Good evening, I'm Paul Edwards in Miami, Florida, and welcome to tonight's edition of Tuesday Topics. For those of you who have been waiting with bated breath to hear Tuesday Topics featuring Mike May, you shall have to wait a little longer, because for whatever reason, Mike is not with us this evening. I'd like to thank our producer, Brian Charlson, for all the work that he's done in getting fine quality programs put together for us. I'd also like to thank Steve Bauer, who is recording tonight's program and who also will turn out to be our editor for tonight's program. Thank you so much, Steve. And obviously, we'd like to thank George Byes from Talking Communities, who provided the software that we're using that allows us to record Tuesday Topics and produce Tuesday Topics and have Tuesday Topics. Tonight, because of the fact that we are actually speaking on election night 2006, we thought that it might be interesting to talk about people's voting experiences, good, bad, or indifferent, to talk about the pros and cons of the various methods that are out there and what those methods actually allow, and the experiences that individuals have had today in terms of voting. I hope that lots of folks will wander in so that we can involve them in our discussion. Our rules tonight are going to be a little bit different. We don't have a highlighted guest, so it'll be kind of a first-come, first-serve. Please remember, if you will, to tell us who you are and where you're from so that we get a pretty clear idea of what happened to you and where you're calling from. I don't know exactly what we'll end up talking about, so we'll kind of play it by ear tonight. But prior to starting off, we had an interesting piece of input from Larry, who is in Phoenix. And maybe you could start off, Larry, by telling us about your experience. It's a sort of a positive-negative experience that I guess kind of ended up a little bit negative for you. But tell us about it.
Sure, Paul. Thanks. Larry here from Phoenix. And just as background real quickly, I've made it a point to be involved as much as I can be in achieving access under Help America Vote Act and that kind of thing, in terms of offering comments and doing little things here and there as I could to help make this day happen. And I also want to throw out there, for the sake of the discussion, that I view this as most Americans do, voting to be a very important right and responsibility. And for me, the ability to do that independently is a really big deal, as it is, I'm sure, for other people listening as well. So I was looking forward to today as the day finally when I got to go pick up my ballot and go vote independently and truly have a secret ballot that nobody had to know what I voted for. Which is what everybody else in the United States has had for quite a while now. So I went to the polls this morning, and the first problem was that I did not bring my registration card, because simply bringing a picture ID was enough. But I do have one. I am a registered voter in Maricopa County, which is where Phoenix is, but unfortunately was not listed on the list of registered voters at the facility, at the precinct. As a side note, while I was there, several other people came in, probably five or six other people, and I heard the same kind of comments. Well, I voted here before, I am registered, what's the problem? So something was going on there, I don't know what. But at any rate, I was told I had to do a provisional ballot, and so I went over and did that. Filled out paperwork and whatever they had me do, give some information, and then I asked to use the accessible voting machine. And when I went to use the accessible voting machine, I sat for probably half an hour to 45 minutes, was told first off, after waiting a little while, that I was the first one to use it, so I'm the guinea pig. Yeah, that's okay. But then overheard a phone call with one of the poll workers talking to somebody, presumably election supervisors or something, saying that my situation was that I'm a provisional voter. There's no number. Apparently you get a number if you're a registered voter. You have a number next to your name on the list, but voting provisionally, you don't have that kind of number. And so they weren't sure what to do with me and how to handle the accessible voting machine, because it has to have a card with a valid number and all of these things. So after this phone call, the gentleman came over. Now, I went with somebody who was sighted, and they had finished voting, and I said, well, you can go out to the car and drink your coffee and whatever, because this is accessible, and I'm going to be able to do this. They came back, and instead of telling me about the problems, their first question to me was, where is the person that you came with? And by this time, I'm a little irritated, and I pretty much said to the guy that, you know, you can talk to me about this. I'm fully capable of understanding what's going on here. You know, I'm thinking the eyes don't work, but last time I checked, the brain was operational, even at 6:30 in the morning. So in the end, what I was told was that I could not vote provisionally with this machine. So I was required to get someone to assist me, and yet again, did not have the opportunity to cast my vote independently. So very frustrated, and I have made a couple of calls, and I'm looking at what, you know, it's not about what my rights are. I just want to make sure that these problems are figured out and that the next time this works better.
Thanks very much. I don't think that I've actually run across your situation before, so it certainly is worth hearing about the fact that accessible machines cannot apparently, or certainly couldn't in your case, deal with a provisional ballot. But there ought to be, there really ought to be a relatively easy ways to make that happen. I certainly think that we in ACB need to follow up with that. Who else would like to tell us about their voting experience today? Well, actually, let's do this, because we had a little talk before. Gary, you voted via absentee ballot. What do you see as the advantages of voting by absentee ballot and the disadvantages, perhaps?
Hello, this is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. Well, I've done this for the past few elections. I guess maybe by explanation, maybe I'll need to go back to how I started all this. I started voting 40 years ago, and my dad used to help and assist me going through and then pulling the levers and whether voting straight party or individually, and that was the old-fashioned way. And then we went to the punch card system, and he would guide me to the place where I needed to be to vote, and he would guide my hand. I mean, he didn't do it for me, and I made the choice, and I punched the holes, and like I did with the old system. But yeah, one experience between that, when we went voted for a local issue, someone like my dad was helping me, but someone else said that he couldn't do it, and they had to do it. So in that particular election, confusing as it was, someone else had to help me with it. I guess they had a Republican or Democrat, but it was a local thing. I don't even think that politics was that much of an issue, but we did it that way. And then because of some health issues that he had, maybe 10 or so years ago, he couldn't go out to vote like he was able to do before. He had like Parkinson's or PSP, and he couldn't do that, so we decided to go with absentee ballot voting. And I suppose the disadvantage of it is that you can't maybe do it as independently as you might want it. But really, like with my mother now and my dad then, they make the choice that I ask for. I mean, they don't just push the one that they want. When I tell them who I want to vote for, they're the ones that with the pencil they punch the hole, or with this new way they do whatever they do now with the drawing the line or whatever it is. But I did see the new machines here in town. They have the low vision support group that I'm involved with, and we had a look at the new machines through the Lansing City Voting Commission, it's a pretty nice machine. It may take a little time to use, but I think it's a good idea. And I think that myself, no matter how you vote, I think that that shows your independence, just because we're doing our patriotic duty, and I think it shows our independence by the virtue of the fact that we do vote. But I can see the frustrations that Larry has, and I feel bad for that. And I mean, a man goes in, or a woman that goes in there feeling good about the idea that he could do it independently without any assistance, and then having the kind of problems that he had, and the thing screws up, so he ends up having to need assistance anyway, and that kind of really builds you up for a letdown, in my opinion, I guess. But at least everybody who just goes and does it, I think, should be applauded for the fact that they, you know, take the opportunity to go vote today or whenever they do it.
Let me actually step us back one step, and this will open it really to anybody who wants to jump in. So we've now created, at least in theory, Larry didn't have a chance to exercise his ballot independently today. I certainly did, and I'll talk about that later. But I wanted to step back to ask people, regardless of whether you voted absentee ballot or otherwise, there are generally anymore a pretty large number of races or contests on any given ballot, some of them for arcane positions like judges, some of them for Senate and House races, but also often in many states, in fact in 37 of the 50 states tonight, there are constitutional amendment issues or referendum issues. And my question to everyone is something that hasn't gotten a lot of attention, but how do we, as blind persons, get access to information on those issues? What did each of you do in order to do that?
Paul, I don't certainly want to hog the time, and I would just say briefly that I think the Internet is a dramatic and great resource for this. I was able to research all kinds of information and go in and inform voter, and I think a number of us use that.
Ryan here from Watertown, Massachusetts. I think the Internet also was a great resource. Here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, we also have a voter's informational brochure that goes out on ballot issues, and that is being recorded each year by our Braille and Talking Book Library and distributed to all those who put themselves on that list to receive political information as it's made available.
Well, the League of Women Voters gave a talk that afternoon about the importance of voting, and I got a cassette that explains the issues of the people that are running for these offices and the judges as well as the governors and all that. I think the Internet is a very important part of this whole thing, and I try to stay as informed as I can be by listening to the news and what the candidates say, listening to the debates on radio or TV, and also there's the idea that, you know, you hear all kinds of wealth of information, and there was some website I haven't tried to go to, but it said don'tvote.com, and that's in the commercials they say don't vote until you've studied the issues and studied what all is said. I mean, it's sort of a backhanded way of saying it. They say don't vote until you've studied the issues.
Hi, everybody. Anisio here from Atlanta. Obviously, I agree with everybody in terms of as far as the impact of the Internet goes and the ability to read newspapers and go to websites of the various candidates. One of the things we have done here in Georgia, I think it might have been for the first time, was GCB organized a legislative breakfast a few weeks back where different candidates were invited to come in and talk about their platforms and address some issues of particular interest for the blind to the blind community. Not a whole lot, a lot of them came. Most of the ones that came were probably those that didn't have a chance to win. That's why they had so much time on their hands. But I think it's a good initiative that as it grows, more and more people will, more and more candidates will find it useful and advantageous to them to show up. The other thing that exists here in Georgia is a disability voter voting project. Different organizations belong to it, including the Center for the Visually Impaired and many others. And one of the things that they have done is develop a list of questions for candidates. Again, questions of relevance for people with disabilities, not just blind people. And then they print the answers of the candidates. And many candidates submit answers. Some of them ignore them. But again, it's another way of shedding some light on the issues and where they, you know, their beliefs and opinions.
Well, one thing I forgot to mention, about 4 years ago when Michigan Council for the Blind met in Lansing and I attended the convention, they had a forum with the people who were running for the spot of governor of Michigan. They had the representative from Governor Granholm's office and then also some of the Republicans that were running on the Democrat, or I mean, on the other side, you know, the Democrat and Republican representatives to talk about their feelings on all this, and so we had some information about where they stood on the issues.
I relied more on newspapers this year than I ever have in the past, and that was pretty helpful. Let's talk about some other people's voting experiences. If folks had some, Brian, were you able to vote in Massachusetts today?
I was indeed. My wife and I and a friend went to our polling place. We were there bright and early. It's a little after 7 this morning. Certainly the first blind folk to come in and use the accessible machine. Here in Massachusetts, we ran into an interesting experience over time. Last November, our Secretary of State, Bill Galvin, decided that he was having difficulty determining which of the different machines would be the most appropriate one for Massachusetts. So he got enough machines to allow each of 3 different communities to try out one machine and took a lot of public input on what worked best. And we thought we had agreed on a machine. But then we got into the paper trail, verifiable recounts, etc. group. And they put a lot of doubt into the Secretary of State's mind and the like. So when it came getting closer and closer to this year's election, instead of having access during the primary, we did not. And in fact, during the general election just held today, only 26 of Massachusetts' 351 communities had accessible voting machines. And some of the larger municipalities, like Boston, not all precincts within the big city was covered. Again, we had 3 different kinds of machines. They claim that it is a test again, but in all reality, they simply didn't choose to buy machines in a timely enough fashion that they could provide them across the Commonwealth. But I did go voting. I was able to sit in a chair, and even though we were using the Diebold machine, even though I cranked it up as fast as it could go for most of the process, it still took me 20 minutes to cast my ballot. Our ballot included only 4 referendum, not like a, did I get that right out there in Phoenix? It was 20 ballots? Can't imagine that. Especially I couldn't imagine that since this particular machine did not allow you to skip forward to where you could vote. The best you could do is try to fast-forward your way through it in order to get past all the description of the ballot measure if you had already decided how you were going to vote. It was empowering in that I was able to do it independently. I was able to do it privately. And at the end of the process, I was able to hear my ballot confirmed prior to hitting the final button that printed the little ticker tape inside the machine to create that paper trail. It was interesting in that the poll workers, other than the one individual who had been trained to use this particular system, had no clue what was going on. They tried to hand us a paper ballot when we signed in, even though we told them we were going to use the accessible machine, and then had to be told to accept the special card that was created for each person using the machine when we turned in those rather than paper ballots. It did cause a little bit more confusion on the way out. But it was still very, very empowering for me.
Thank you, Brian. In Florida, we had 22 contests that we had to deal with, 22 contests. So I'm actually surprised that you got away with only four. And I'm also surprised that it took you that long if you were actually only dealing with four. Larry, in Phoenix, you said you had the largest number of contests in the country. How many did you have?
I need to repair that. It's not contests. This was ballot measures, not contests. There are many, many electoral contests, but these were four ballot measures.
In Arizona, this is Larry, in Arizona we had 19 propositions from anything related to English as the official language to issues of immigration to anti-smoking measures, 19 of those, all very heavily contested issues. And then many, many, you know, our Senate, Congress, State House and Senate races, you know, those local races. The ballot was huge.
And I only live a few miles from Brian, actually. This is Carl from Boston. And I live in one of those municipalities where you're talking about where there weren't enough machines for all the precincts. They only bought about half the machines needed for all the precincts in the city of Boston. So I called the city clerk's office several weeks ahead of time, told them which precinct I lived in, so they would have a machine in there. And when I walked in, at first they didn't know what I wanted, but I finally found someone who did, brought me over. It was very clear I was the first person to use that machine because they were taking the packaging off the machine because it hadn't really been used. But that was okay, and the woman took a few minutes to figure out what to do. She got it started. She left me alone. I did the same thing Brian did. It was very slow. I even cranked up the speed all the way up. And I was feeling exhilarated because I was going through all the names, all the two ballot questions. And it said, and then it even confirmed all the people I voted for at the end. And I said yes. And then it said, click the final thing to print the paper equivalent. So what it does is it prints out the paper equivalent, which then gets read out by a scanner. Well, the machine could not print out the paper equivalent, and it said, error occurred, please contact election official. So I called her over. She said, oh, I was afraid this was going to happen. This is happening to all the other accessible machines in Boston. So she called up the person and said, we can't get anybody here to fix it because he's all over the place trying to fix all these accessible machines. So I then had to have somebody read it to me, but she also called a second person over to verify, since I couldn't see whatever I said she was marking off. So I was not able to do it independently and privately. In fact, I had two people with me, even though I went by myself, voting for me because the machine did not work. So it was very frustrating because the machine was there, but I was unable to use it.
That actually is very interesting, and we're beginning to get gosh, almost a sad story where accessible machines are certainly off at the periphery of election officials' minds. I voted in the polling place that I've used for the last five or six elections independently and privately, so I'm kind of a known commodity there. Even so, when I got there, people were far less well-trained this time in terms of how to deal with the accessible machine than they were the last time I came. On this particular occasion, it took them probably 8 to 10 minutes to get the machine up and running. Again, there appeared to have been very little use of the accessible voting machine so far during the day. And so it wasn't a commonly done thing. We had, I think, six propositions, and the other 16 things were just contests. But in some of them, we had 7 and 8 candidates. So there was still quite a lot to get through. Overall, though, once the machine got running, It functioned very efficiently. I was able to run through from beginning to end, and was able to verify my votes and then cast the ballot without any serious problems. It is interesting, though, given a relatively small cross-section of us, how many folks had some problems. We have one other person who's with us whose name is Danny, and Danny, you'll have to tell us where you're from, because I don't know. But Danny reported via text message, because he doesn't have a mic in his current configuration, that he actually voted privately and independently and really didn't have a lot of difficulty or didn't appear to have a lot of difficulty doing that, and that it was a pretty cool thing for him to do. And Danny says he's from Lebanon, Pennsylvania. Let's ask another question then, insofar as folks are able to answer this question. This year in Florida, at any rate, there didn't seem to be very many disability issues that were very much a part of the campaign. And I saw very little in newspapers that suggested very much concern of those seeking election for disability issues, or very much interaction between the disability community and those seeking election. It was interesting to hear Gary talking about what went on in Michigan, and some of the other folks. Were there races that any of you guys were involved with where disability issues were significant?
Here in Massachusetts, the Perkins School for the Blind offered itself up as a location for a disability issues forum, and both of the gubernatorial candidates were invited to come speak. As it turns out, only the Democrat picked up on that offer, and he, Deval Patrick, who used to work for the U.S. government in the Civil Rights Division, came along with John Kerry, former presidential candidate and current senator from Massachusetts. And we were able to fill the hall with we filled the hall, so to speak, as well as the lobby and part of the chapel, somewhere around 600 people present, with more than 60 of them wheelchair users. We had sign language interpreters as well as CART reporters for those who were deaf and hard of hearing, assistive listening devices, and of course the students of Perkins were present. After Deval gave an opening comment, as did John Kerry, then they opened it up for questions for the bulk of the time, and at least four of the 15 to 20 or so questions that were asked by members of the Perkins School for the Blind student body on such topics as the needs of individuals who are blind and have secondary disabilities to receive the kind of post-high school graduation supports that they would otherwise receive if they were in the care of the organization here in the state, a government entity in the state, DMR, Department on Mental Retardation, as they would under those circumstances. So that was an interesting question. The second one that I thought was quite interesting was on standardized testing and whether or not it was fair to ask children with significant disabilities to pass the same test as those who did not have those disabilities. I thought the candidates answered them quite well. And the final question asked by the audience was by me, and the very subject was accessible voting and whether or not I would be able to vote privately, independently, and verifiably at future elections under a Deval Patrick administration. I was assured that that would be the case, and John Kerry got very much involved in that debate and, in fact, came over to talk to me after the final mic switch was thrown that day. But absolutely, the disabled community was very involved in the gubernatorial campaign and also in a couple of the other statewide campaigns, though not nearly as significantly as in the governor's race.
Would someone else like to comment on disability involvement in their state?
We didn't see anything happen really here with the governor's race this year. I mean, I didn't go to this convention this year, but I don't think that they did anything like that this time like they did 4 years ago, but it's nice that they are able to do things like that. I think that probably more of this should happen, but sometimes I think that it's hard for blind people to really get out there in the fray, like, so to speak, to mix and mingle with the politicians to make sure that their needs are met. I don't know if this is a cynical view, but sometimes politicians talk about that they that they're willing to help, but after the time has gone by, I don't know how much they remember what they said. You know, when they say that they'd like to meet our needs that we have.
I raised the question about disability issues being important and about the disability community's involvement with elections. But it's an interesting debate because I suppose there are two ways of looking at a disabled person's responsibilities at the time of elections. One is to say that people with disabilities, because they're advocates, ought to vote for the candidate who is most supportive on disability issues. But there's certainly another school of thought that might suggest that people with disabilities ought to be concerned about issues that concern members of the general public, whether those are issues like the war in Iraq or whether those are issues like voting access or not necessarily disability voting access, or whether there are issues like the state of the economy, the state of unemployment, state initiatives, and so on. And my question to those of you who are minded to get involved is, where do you fit into that hierarchy? Do you see yourself as voting for people who are disability friendly, or do you vote for people instead who espouse a broader range of issues with which you can agree?
Paul, Larry from Phoenix. I missed the chance to respond to your last question, and then I will also respond to this one. I think one thing that I observed in this election cycle, and not necessarily directly tied to any one candidate, but broader issues about a lot of states now are requiring, I know Arizona is, and a number of others requiring you, it's an actual law that you have to produce certain types of ID, photo ID and that kind of thing when you come to vote. And I heard from time to time discussions about lawsuits and complaints and appeals and that kind of thing, and they would, you know, I felt like sometimes they would lump in people with disabilities and other groups, you know, the poor and economically disadvantaged and stuff like that. But they lumped in people with disabilities as this group of people somehow that did not have or ID or would be somehow hurt by these types of programs. And I was really irritated with that. I suppose there could be a few people affected by that. But I guess I really disagreed with that. And yet I heard that bantered around a little bit related to voting. I know I did here in Arizona there was a threat of a lawsuit to try to overturn some things. I tried to make a disability issue out of one thing. Our local candidate here for Senate, John Kyle, and I talked about this on my last Disability Nation show. I tried to make an issue out of it because he ran this ad featuring a woman with quadriplegia and had her saying how great he was, but I went and checked his voting record, and he doesn't have a good record of supporting disability issues, is not a sponsor of a big issue to some people with disabilities, maybe not visual impaired folks, but a bill called MICASA, helping people with disabilities stay out of nursing homes by rerouting how Medicaid funding works and Medicare funding. And it's a great program, has all kinds of reasons why it would work, why it's more efficient, and yet he runs this ad, but then when you look at his voting record, he's not supportive. So I guess where I'm going with that is that I think it's important when we see candidates make disability issues like this guy did, we need to jump on those and hold them accountable. And I tried to get comment from his office and could not, but that was a big deal. To respond to this last question, though, when I go to vote, certainly disability issues or their support of disability issues or judges and their views on disability issues, you know, when our senators and House members vote on judges. I certainly consider all of that, but this may be controversial, but I think there's more important issues in the world today than my rights as a person with disability. And let me try to explain that, because somebody might be going, my gosh, what is he saying? But, you know, we got a war, we got terrorism, we've got, you know, this and that going on. And yeah, my rights as a person with disability are important, and I'm absolutely going to support a candidate that supports what I believe and get in the face of a candidate that doesn't. But you've got to rank issues of importance. I know I do this when I go to the polls, and I try to get good information to rank those issues. And I guess if I have to vote for a candidate that is maybe less supportive of disability rights, but is really got it right in some other areas that I think are really important, I may be swayed to vote for them. And so I guess my point is you've got to rank priorities and what you think is most important without selling out your brothers and sisters with disabilities, I guess. I don't know how better to say it.
I think that's a pretty good way of saying it. I try to tell myself that there are certainly other issues that concern me, issues like the death penalty and abortion rights and, you know, all the other big issues to concern yourself with. But I look at it this way. The general public is going to vote on those issues in pretty grand fashion. They're going to spend a lot of time and energy and emotion working out who they're going to vote for based on that. But there's very small portion of the general public casting their ballot who are caring about issues of disability. So while I'm concerned about those other things, I know that for the most part they're going to be dealt with by the masses. While issues of disabilities are primarily going to be dealt with me or not be dealt by with me. And therefore I have a higher level of responsibility to deal with those issues that I'm intimately involved with.
Paul, this is Steve Bauer in Wichita, Kansas. And I guess I can take this and twist it around a little bit. Our election commissioner, we are in Sedgwick County, Kansas, actually, he wanted to make sure that the poll workers were indeed up to speed on how to best assist blind and visually impaired people in the voting process. So the president of the local Visually Handicapped Association, myself, who I'm totally blind, and then a low vision lady, we participated in the filming of a training video that came out to be about 25 minutes long. This took the poll worker through the entire process of how to guide a person with a visual impairment, how to orient them to the machine, the whole bit. And I was really impressed that the election commissioner took the initiative to do this training video to help make the voting experience much better for a person who is blind or visually impaired. And my wife and I both voted in the primary and in the general. We both voted in the advance voting option. So about a week before, there were multiple locations you could go to. And we went, and I used the accessible machine. Yes, it was slow, and I wished I could have sped him up. But it was so great to be able to vote without having to have assistance and to cast that secret ballot. So this is sort of a memorable year regarding voting.
Well, I feel myself that, you know, being concerned about disability concerns is important because I don't think the general public is as concerned as we are, and we should be concerned. But I try to think, I like to think that I vote for the greater good of what's the best for the country instead of just the things that help my meet my needs most of all, and I'd like to vote for the greater good. I think I tend to be more conservative, but I think that probably sometimes you see all this waste in government. I think if they saved money, they could solve a lot of that, and there'd be more room and money for other things. But this deal about the war in Iraq, I think that's important. Terrorism is something that should be a concern of ours, and I think that we should maybe get close to the candidates who are in there, if possible. Maybe make sure that they're aware of our needs and help that way. But there is a tendency, I suppose, I don't know what other people think, but for blind people and disabled people to, I could be wrong about this, but to vote liberal more than conservative, because we need more of that. I mean, liberals tend to vote for more government, and we need more government programs, I suppose, than a lot of other folks. I mean, the disabled population, I think, needs more than the average citizen does. And so I suppose that's where we might tend to vote for candidates who have more of a liberal bent, because they might provide things that meet our needs better. But I don't know. I think we need to be concerned about everything else too, but we need to maybe, if possible, woo the other candidates for voting when they're running, and be friends with people who may not be of our liking or point of view on some of the things, and maybe they can help understand what our needs are too.
Actually, Gary, it's interesting that you should say that, and certainly the traditional view has been that people with disabilities tended to be liberal. For the first time since the disability vote was counted carefully, for the first time in 2004, the disability community voted overwhelmingly for President Bush and for more conservative candidates as well. So it's interesting that stereotype about disabilities no longer seems to be holding. It may have come a little closer this year. I want to look at another question. One of the ways that we acquired information this year about candidates, whether we wanted to or not, was through television and radio ads. I had the opportunity to be in Ohio this weekend, and I've obviously been in Florida. In both of those states are states where there were some pretty nasty campaigns being waged on television and on radio. And I would be interested to know from folks what their reaction to those campaigns, and particularly to some of the more egregiously nasty campaigns, were. And afterwards, I'll certainly tell you what mine were.
I personally tend not to really listen to the TV and radio spot, because I used to work, I don't now, but I used to work in media, and I've worked for some of the media outlets here in Boston, so I tend, and I know how it's done a little bit, so I tend to stay away. But they were quite a bit of mudslinging here in Massachusetts, and that did get quite a bit of press.
Here in Kansas, the race for Attorney General was very hot and contested. Both radio and television advertisements for both candidates were so mean and ugly and nasty that it just made you not want to vote for either of them. So I think that the media, the electronic media, tends to damage a person's reputation and more than help them. Because there's so much effort from one side saying what the other believes and what the other says, instead of spending time telling me what they believe and what they say. So I don't like the advertising. I think it's ugly, and it just almost should be eliminated, because I don't think it does any good at all.
Here in Florida, I found that the ads that were propagated gave me absolutely no information, especially as a new person who is seeking for it. I gained no information of any validity at all that helped me vote. There was no dealing with issues. It was the tearing down of character. And I remember in logic class we were taught that's called ad hominem. And if you have to tear down someone's character in order to prove or to make yourself look better, it actually shows that you yourself really don't have too much to stand on to begin with. You should be able to stand full-faced, stand up straight, and say what you believe in with your 2 feet on the ground, and not have to tear down another person in order to prove that you might be a better one. So I learned absolutely nothing and was very disappointed, and like you, Steve, I felt like why even, oh, surprised me. I felt like I didn't want to vote for either, because who was really telling the truth? There was nothing of substantive value.
I get tired of hearing these commercials where one tears the other down. I mean, like, I would rather hear them talk about the what they're going to do when they get in there and the good points maybe that they have, but they're overshadowed by all the backbiting and all the stuff that they say about the other person. And I'd rather hear them say some positive things about what they'll do when they get in.
Larry here from Phoenix. I'm really frustrated with the tone as well. I can't think of one commercial other than our governor's commercials, and she was up by a huge margin, so I had nothing to worry about in the polls. But otherwise, I can't really think of any one commercial that had anything positive to say about anything. Many, many commercials, just terrible stuff. Accusing people of supporting the ACLU, and that in itself wasn't the issue, but it claimed they supported, you know, criminals and people who abused people, and on the list went, and people not paying taxes, and it's just unbelievable stuff, and it's so much worse than ever before, I think. I mean, I've voted in been able to vote for a good 15, years now, but I've just never heard it like this, and I don't know. I've been thinking about what can we as Americans do to turn this and make politicians say, you know what, the people don't want to hear this. Those commercials do work. They have studies that say they do work. People are left with impressions, and usually for me, the most egregious and outrageous the accusations made, the less likely I am to vote for the candidate that's making them. So when, you know, our Senator Kyle goes out and runs an ad accusing the guy he's running against of crazy stuff, I don't think about the crazy stuff because I know it's a bunch of lies. I'm left remembering how pathetic it is that the senator who's been in office for 15 years or 10 years has to make these accusations. But I can't figure out what we can do as people to demand better from our politicians, because the system is envied around the world as a system that's free and allows people to vote, and yet I think it's crap lately. Pardon the frankness of the term, but it's pretty worthless. It's very difficult for somebody to learn anything about the people running for office unless they do a ton of work, and it shouldn't have to be that way.
Larry, someone asked in a text message what in the world people could have said was wrong with the ACLU, so let me give you an opportunity to respond to that. I know what was wrong with it in Florida, so if it's coming back to you, I'll tell you what it was said here.
I tell you what, this was a nationally organized effort, and anybody who had any involvement with the ACLU on the Democratic side was accused of supporting an organization called the Man Boy Love Association. Absolutely crazy stuff. And they looked into this, and locally I saw a story where they investigated the claims in this ad. The person had nothing to do with it. They had volunteered for the ACLU in Florida at one time. Nothing to do with this case, but somehow they made this connection. It was just nuts.
And the ACLU in Florida was directly tied to allowing criminals to roam the streets, and to putting our children in danger from child molesters, because that's all the ACLU is good for.
Yeah, same thing here. Well, looking at what I'm starting to see on the red and blue map, I think people didn't listen to that, but we'll leave it nonpartisan.
Interesting ideas here, gentlemen. I would say the best way we can deal with negative campaigning is to vote for the other guy. And if both primary candidates treat us like idiots in that fashion, then I guess what we need to do is learn how better to cast write-in candidates. Certainly this year, because I was so disappointed with Bill Galvin's lack of ability to put in place the accessible voting component for all Massachusetts residents, I chose to vote for the third-party candidate. One I knew wasn't going to win, but hopefully to send the message that this was unacceptable as far as I was concerned. And I used the same kind of methodology for dealing with that kind of negative campaigning as well.
In Florida, some of the campaigns were actually kind of funny, even though they were absolutely awful. I think my favorite one was a campaign ad about a candidate who had been in the House of Representatives nationally, and it said, "So and so has the second worst record in the United States Congress on attendance. Can you find him in Washington?" "Nope, but I saw his chair." "I did see his chair. I really did." And that was the only meaningful statement that was made, that he wasn't very accessible. But hardly significant, and I guess I saw far less policy on television and in ads this time, and far more character assassination than I've seen in any campaign. And clearly, I agree with Brian. I think we as Americans need to say to politicians that this is no longer an acceptable thing to do, and we need to find some ways to change. While I'm disheartened by some of the problems that we've had, I'm actually heartened by the fact that so many of us who were here today actually went out and voted. That says an awful lot, I think, for how seriously blind and visually impaired people are taking their right to vote, and particularly their right to vote independently. So perhaps we can go around quickly and see if folks have some final thoughts on the elections of 2006 or other issues that we so far haven't touched on, and then we'll wind this evening's program down.
Well, I'm going to throw out a rather odd statement. Today, one of the things I thought was really quite bizarre is, you remember that chair, Paul, that was brought over for you to sit in so you could cast your ballot without having to stand there for 20-plus minutes? Well, I asked, what's the sign on the back of this chair taped to the back edge? And it turned out it said handicapped on it. I guess we have a long way to go. We can vote accessible, but apparently we've got to wear a big sign on our back that explains to the rest of the world why we sit down to vote.
This is ridiculous, you know. I don't know. The only thing I could say is that I think it's a constitutional right and duty, a patriotic duty to vote. And if you don't vote, then you don't have a right to complain.
The most outrageous comment or campaign thing that I saw this year, actually, Gary, you'll appreciate this, came from Michigan, and I'll leave this as my parting thought, and it just shows my frustration. This made the national news, or at least the news here in Arizona, from Michigan, and that is apparently a flyer was sent out by one party accusing the current governor of being responsible for 3 murders. Apparently a individual was mistakenly let out by parole folks or something. Obviously the governor had nothing to do with it, but the buck stops there, and so they blamed her. And it's just such irresponsible politics, and it's just an example of what's going on. Nobody is competent enough to talk about the issues or what they believe or they're afraid to or something. But I really hope things change and improve. Next time we're here voting and talking about it, I would hope that we're talking about our candidates who really stood up and said what they thought, because this has been pathetic.
One positive thing about the political advertising campaigns that you receive in the mail is that they're generally on a pretty good cardstock, very close to the weight of Braille paper. I've got a great stack of scratch paper, thanks to all the political advertisements.
That's fabulous.
Okay. I think what I take away from the year 2006 is actually some hope as well. And that hope comes from the fact that it would appear as though the American public is doing some pretty careful thinking about the degree to which it wants to tie itself to a particular set of values, and the cycle is turning around. And there really was a time over the past few years where I questioned whether that cycle would in fact turn around as effectively as it was. I think whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, having political change in our country that moves us cyclically back and forth between the two ruling parties and that swings us a little to the left and a little to the right in terms of the way our government evolves is a valid and appropriate thing. And I certainly am glad to see democracy rearing its beautiful head in our country. Thank you very much, all of you, for being a part of Tuesday Topics this evening and for becoming part of an impromptu discussion of Elections 2006, the good, the bad, and mostly the ugly. Thank you so much for being with us on Tuesday Topics.
I'm Steve Bauer, and I invite you to join me next time on Tuesday Topics when I fill in for Paul Edwards, and we will explore the topic of sighted children and blind adults. How do sighted kids interact with blind adults, parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, and family friends? What are some of the ups and downs of these young sighted kids' lives? My guests will include Nolan Crabb, a father who is blind with four daughters. We'll also hear from Cheryl Edwards, a blind mother of four, and several others. Children are our future. What can we do as blind or visually impaired adults to nurture those special relationships? We'll explore it next time on Tuesday Topics. To participate in the recording of Tuesday Topics, we invite you to join us on Tuesday evenings in the U.S. at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's Wednesday, 1 hour Universal Time. The program is recorded in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. The first time you enter the chat room, the software will automatically download and install on your computer. All you need is a microphone that is plugged into your computer sound card. A few minutes before each show begins, those online will be happy to assist with audio checks and to answer questions about the chat room service and how it works. An announcement promoting the topic to be discussed will be emailed to the ACB Radio Friends list early each week. So we hope you will come and join us Tuesday each week when Tuesday Topics is being recorded. Again, the URL is ourplace.acbradio.org.